Welcome to Conscious Communication, the podcast that can help you improve your company's culture and better your team's communication, helping you build more significant relationships. Now here's your host, Philip Bogolub.
I have the privilege and honor of talking with Kiyomi O'Connor. I think I got that right. Kiyomi is a woman of experience and author of her memoir, A Sky of Infinite Blue, A Japanese Immigrant's Search for Home and Self. Her book talks about her spiritual journey through life and death. She is an ordained Buddhist Dharma teacher. If we have time, I'd love to talk about that. And is a leader in the spiritual community. Kiyomi, I want to thank you for being on the show today.
Thank you very much, Philip. I am so excited. And then thank you for inviting me here.
Absolutely. And I love her story. And I want to ask you first, all these things just didn't happen. And I know there's a lot of things that have happened in your life. But what serendipity, what accident, what coincidence, what's that universal mind, spirit, and angel? What pushed you in the direction where you are now? And like I said, I know there's many, but what's that thing that comes to mind that really got you to where you're at today?
Throughout my life, I have so many adversities. But if you're caught up with the adversity and then going deeper and then, you know, you may lost, but to me, adversity is the one guide me to get to here.
Yes, I love that. I mean, you know, I love that as an adversity because, you know, I would like a different word for mistakes and things that happen. We all go through stuff. Why we go through it, you could think about it forever. But you'll never get anywhere. But if you learn from adversity, I'm using the word adversity because it's much better than mistakes. You learn through adversity.
Yes.
It keeps coming at you all the time. It's, you know, you get through one and then you come mm-hmm. through another. So in your experience and you live through different adversities in your life, what was it that guided you? What was it that you saw in front of you going, these different coincidences and serendipities or accidents that happened that going, oh, there's an opportunity to be able to use this in a positive way or how to move it forward. How did that occur for you?
Yes. You know, adversity, if you think about, you know, like a traumas or whatever, there's an external component to it, you know, we can't avoid. And it happened to us. But how we interpret and how internalize, that part is the one most important, and then also the key to change the course of adversities. So how we perceive, like perception itself, the difficulty in how we perceive, that's the thing we really need to change and then realize and then reflect and then change.
But we're also, it's hard. I agree with you 100% at that perception and your adversity. Now I know I'm using two words now forever, perception and adversity, because it's true. It's almost like people say reframing. But when you see these things, if you look to the outside world to give you advice, you're forcing, you're desperate, you're not looking inside internally and you don't find it. You get mm-hmm. very frustrated. Mm-hmm. So when everybody goes through stuff in life, it's just, you can't stop it. And the mm-hmm. more you force against it, it's like, you've heard the Tao Te Ching before. And Tao Te Ching talks about water all the time and being pushed back. Mm-hmm. You know, Lao Tzu talks about that all the time. So how do you keep moving forward and not, and trying to stop yourself from looking for the outside for the answers, knowing that the inside is where you need to be? How do you pray and meditate? How do you kind of recommend what people do to get through difficult times?
Yes. You know, when I was a child, you know, very young child, I didn't know, of course, you know, external world is the one inevitable. I have to accept all the time, the parents, family, and all of the difficulties I experienced as an emotionally abused child. So in that sense, I went through, suicidal attempt and all of that stuff. And then up to the point, I couldn't take it anymore. So I had to change my environment. That happened when I moved to States. So first, you know, when we are still unsure what to do, that primary change could occur when you decided to move out from that environment. But since I came to States, I started Buddhism, and then, you know, how we perceive could be related to the, it called like a storehouse. You know, we have a kind of a memory storehouse, and it is related to like a karmic influence. We have a layer of subconsciousness, and then our experience could be resonate that stored memories. And then even a small stimuli become more exaggerated and then augmented in our mind. So that's the one that maybe become the habit. So for me to realize that kind of a pattern of my behavior or the thought patterns is the one of the big change to me. And then I realized how I can manage to control that subconsciousness.
Wow. Well, the show's over now. She just summed up everything in about 2 minutes. it's true. The story, I call it the file cabinet. You can call whatever you want, you know, and you've got this file cabinet of all these experiences, and that you let them run you. Mm-hmm. You let them take over you.
Yes.
And, you know, blame only goes so far. But the problem, you know, there's something I was reading, I do a lot of reading, and it's like I'm sure you do, you know, it's like, you know, as you get older, you know, if you don't get married or you don't do this or that, you know, you get into a habit and routine and you just don't want to get out of it. Well, you can change it at any time in your life. Mm-hmm. I was an engineer in the medical field with an MBA, and I left it about 8 years ago, and I didn't know I'd be sitting here talking to you. I didn't know I'd have a philosophy. I didn't know I'd be re-erect my musical studio, what I had when I was 20 years old. I'm not 20 anymore, but it's very uncomfortable. It's unknown. But within Buddhism, why did you choose the Buddhism as a, because there's so many different things to believe in. What attracted you? Because there's so many different philosophies out there. What is the thing that attracted you, or was there something that happened going, oh, I, you know, just kind of came at you by coincidence?
Yes, it's meant to be, probably.
that's very true. That's true. Yes.
Yeah, even the Buddhism, there are lots of different sects and then the teachings. Okay. And then so since my childhood, you know, I was very sensitive, and then I was pretty much aware of what's happening around my world. You know, it's pretty precocious, I guess. So, I mean, even spiritual-wise, I was so interested in not to religion, so-called religion, but I was very spiritual child.
Right, yes.
And then, sometimes I felt like a spiritual phenomenon, you know, like a, some people say ghost, but, and then that sometimes annoyed me, but also intrigued me more, you know, deeper world. And then so, but since I was in a way suffering as a kind of being abused, and then so I couldn't find out how I can get out, and then how I can use spirituality for better. And then, but I was still struggling. And so I went to lots of different creed. I mean, like Hinduism or even Buddhism or esoteric Buddhism. I kind of like come across, but I wasn't really sure. After I moved to States, I decided, I came to States as a postdoctoral researcher first, working at NIH. I got invitation from NIH.
Oh, wow.
That's the one, you know, I grabbed it because I could escape from Japan, and then the surroundings that I was soaked in. Mm-hmm. So, and then I changed the environment to States, and then, you know, practically I have to live in this country from scratch. I'm not speaking well, but back then it much worse. And so everything I have to collect into my dictionary, kind of like a life life experience.
Right.
So, and I become a very practical, resilient, and I met my husband to be from England. He was a cancer researcher. And then so we got married, and then I realized I become a practical, more confident, more resilient woman. And then I decided to go back to my original dentist. Then I got a dental degree in Japan, and then also went to the post, like a graduate school.
Okay.
So, but in the States, I didn't have a license, but I like to be serving people. So that's why I decided not to just only pure science only. It is not my type of life. I want to be among people. So I decided I changed my career back to dentistry. For that purpose, we didn't have enough financial aid because my husband was from England. I was from Japan. I came to the States with two suitcases, nothing else. So we started really even financially from scratch. Even I have a student loan or whatever, but cutting our living cost, 50% impossible. So I asked my father. My father is the one of the cause of my emotional abuse. My father and my paternal family are the one that caused me, pain.
Right.
So, but strikingly surprised, I thought he could help me. I would never, ever go back to him because, he was estranged from our family decades. He had another family, outside marriage life. And then he had another daughter. So I have a very young half daughter, but we never met. And then so my father was estranged for almost 20 years. Ooh. So, but what first thing I thought was my father. And my father helped me for 2 years for me to get through this dental, situation. And then I got licensed and I was employed by the university dental school. So that's what happened. But through that experience, and then the very last financial aid he offered me after 2 years, after he finished it, he was prognosis with the terminal cancer, and then just live a few months. That's he was told. And then so I, and then that was very shocking to me because I was kind of looking forward to rebuild the relationship with my estranged father. And then I felt I needed to help him to reconcile with my family. And then I went back and forth many times before my father passed away several months later. So before he left, he, some reason, I was shocked. He was actually intubated. He couldn't speak, but he used his, one of my relatives to speak for him to me to let me know he wanted me to pursue the A Buddhist teaching. And then that turned out to be so fantastic. I mean, esoteric Buddhist, one of the esoteric Buddhism. Esoteric Buddhism doesn't exist in the world except Japan because...
Up there, yeah.
Yeah, because a long time ago, early 800, it died out in China. There's a little Tibetan has a little esoteric component, not 100%, but 100% esoteric Buddhism exists only in Japan. But that was one of the stream, like a lineage of esoteric Buddhism, and because of my father. Last word, even he couldn't speak, but, using other person to tell me he wanted. So I had no doubt to take a look, and then I experienced, and then that profundity was amazing. So I was like blown out. And then so since I had a little spiritual background before, you know, I knew what means to be mandala or whatever, you know, but that teaching made me feel I can cultivate my own inner goodness in this very life.
That's an amazing story because out of it was, I'm sure it was very difficult to, you know, you probably battled in your mind about wanting to make it right with your father, mm-hmm. not for him, but more for you. Yeah. And, you know, you can't change anybody, right? You can only change yourself.
Yes.
And when you went through that, and then it's not a coincidence that he got sick. It's not mm-hmm. a coincidence that he you know, those things that were meant to be. I know it sounds strange, but you know what I'm talking about. Because one of the biggest changes in my life, my parents, they were married for 65 years. They were together for about 70. And my mom died from cancer in a few months. My dad died after that. They were hooked. Mm-hmm. They had to die close. My dad had needed my mom. That was the end of it. Said and my dad's name was Harv. My mom's name was Joyce. So my mom probably said after she died, going, okay, Harv, let's go. The whole thing is I was emptying books out of the house. We mm-hmm. all had different tasks to do when they died.
Right.
And I had this book called God Winks. And I opened the book. And the first thing it said, it's not a coincidence that you're reading this book at this time. You know, and I'm like, I still get chills. And that was several years ago because out of grief, out of adversity, see, I'm using your word, mm-hmm. out of adversity can come a perception of joy and abundance, can come out of anything. It was something I was reading a while ago that if the whole world is suffering, you don't have to suffer along with the world because something's always going on. Everybody says it's, you know, our parents said it was the worst of times. When we're gone off this planet into another frequency, the next generation, this is the worst ever. Everybody always thinks it's the worst ever. But if you go by what the outside world tells you and you don't go into the inside, I have eliminated all negativity in my life from people to anything else, fill in the blank, whatever that negativity is for you. Because I'd rather have one positive person in your life than 100 people bringing you down.
Yeah.
You know, going, you know, Kiyomi, you know, you can't do this. You can't do this. You can't do this. You're a loser. You're stupid. You know, and you need a lot of people to come and tell you, no, you can't. You're fine. You're fine. You're fine. And we are magnets, and how we attract those things, but what we think about, talk about, and feel is, you know, I come from the X-ray tube field. In the X-ray tubes, you can't see radiation. That color, there's no color spectrum of light, but it can cure people and it can diagnose people. You can't see your colors. I'm sorry, go ahead.
No, exactly.
No, because like when your cell phone, can you see the color spectrum of light coming into your cell phone? Nope, but it works. So I always say, don't trust what you see. Trust more what you don't see.
Yeah.
And when you said, you know, esoteric Buddhism, I mean, I've not heard of that before. And there are so many different beliefs. And you're right. There's different sects for everything. And you need to kind of whittle it down and figure out what works for you. But, you know, I what I like about philosophy and belief systems and certain parts of religion, not as a new religion, as in the whole scope of the building and where you go. But the whole thing, for me, I'm Jewish. So for me, I learn from everybody else's experience, which makes my belief system, my spirituality, even better for my universal mind, spirits, and angels, my serendipity, accidents, and coincidences, all those things that happen in my life. I want to ask you about your book, A Sky of Infinite Blue. First of all, for me, A Sky of Infinite Blue, I always do a prayer, and I do this. I just say, thank you for the angels in the wind, the spirits in the clouds, and the blue sky of God. And I always bow. This is something I do in the philosophy. They gave me this. I'm not smart enough to create all these things. So the spirits gave me this, and I do this every day. And I always say the blue sky of God, because God is in the blue sky. And there's spirit guides that tell the angels what to do and where to go and how to help you and how to do things. So I always do these things. And blue sky is very important to me because, you know, when I pray, I go, come on, wind. Come on, angels. You're near me. I know you're near me because I'm always believing these things are around you. And when you plug into this, you get when you get used to it and you see it in a way that's benefiting you, it's unseen. You can't see it. You can't put your finger on it. So what made you type? I love the name, A Sky of Infinite Blue. Why did you name it that?
It's directly coming from my experience from called Saito Homa. Saito Homa is a fire ritual. You know, in the esoteric Buddhism, we have a fire and then water rituals mainly. So okay. I have to mention it before you go this. You know, you mentioned about this mudra. You do, as a Jewish person, you do this. But this is exactly, we do the mudra.
This is not Judaism. This is something I came up with the philosophy I created. So this is actually stands for something?
It is.
Okay, that's weird.
It is a containment of the universe. And then it's called Shinyo. Shinyo means as it is, who we are and how the world works, everything. Invisible world, but it's containment.
I didn't know that.
And then, you know, this bended these two fingers, you know, like a ring finger and then the middle finger.
Right.
It is water and the fire. Water and the fire is within. This is, all the fingers indicates five element, like earth, water, fire, wind, and the space. It means universe.
I didn't know that. I mean, it has nothing to do with Judaism. It just came out of my imaginational mind. And I'm like, I don't know where it came from, but I didn't have any idea it had significance. That's cool. I love it.
And then actually we have not just only mudra, but a mantra attached to it.
Okay.
Mantra is like a word.
Right.
Yes. And then there's some musicality on it. Shall I do it?
Please.
Yes. Joju san namu shinyo, namu shinyo, namu shinyo, namu shinyo, namu shinyo.
Wow. What does that mean?
Namu is like a together, oneness with shinyo means a world to us, like invisible. But all of the truth and wisdom, compassion is contained within.
Wow. Wow. It kind of gives me chills. Like I said, this, when I was doing, I mean, Ajanoi is a made up word, A-J-A-N-O-I, that I told you earlier. Yeah. And soul knowledge, I don't know where this stuff comes from. It's coming from out there. Yeah. And suddenly I'm like, I started doing this. I'm like, it had nothing to do with Judaism. I'm like, I don't know. I like this. It kind of makes me, now I know why. So. Yeah. Obviously you and I were meant to talk at some point.
Yes, like a synchronicity or
yes.
Like when you did started to do this, like well, how you ended, like oh my god.
and that's it's just amazing to me because the people I've been in a couple of weeks is the first year this podcast show's been on, and I got about 56 or 57 already recorded. And what's amazing is every time I talk to people, I get more and more people that are more spiritual, more and more people that believe in God. And they might not call it God. You can call it Krishna. You can call it whatever you want. It doesn't matter. Call it a cup of coffee. But it's amazing to me because I believe more people are really wanting to connect with something inside themselves because they got to trust it. But they don't because the noise in the outside says, I can't tell any people, you wrote a musical? Nobody's going to buy that musical. Well, right now, I have a friend of mine who found somebody in Hollywood who's interested in my musical. Guess what? I didn't know that would happen. Did it happen overnight? No. Did this podcast show happen overnight? No. Did the philosophy get hot? I mean, I speak on my philosophy. I go to the health club here locally in Illinois, and I'm having more people interested in this mindfulness that they call it now, right? But the whole thing is interesting because that is the coolest stuff that I'm like, I had no idea I was doing. Wait, what is this officially called?
This is Joju San Mudra, like everlasting, like ever present, the mudra.
Got it.
Yeah.
So, I love it.
You know, I'm not answering to your question about the infinite blue, but since you mentioned about the invisible, you know, that esoteric means not known yet.
Right.
So it doesn't mean to be secret. It is not experienced yet, not heard yet, not right. touched yet,
right.
not tasted it, you know, through our five senses. But beyond five senses, we have a consciousness and a subconsciousness. All of this, not yet experienced, but to me, before we are born, we already know. We already know everything. But as we are coming out of that water soaked, like a lung, and then, you know, as we started to breathe and then exchange to air, that's the moment we totally like a blank, forgotten. But we are regaining that kind of invisible, we already knew, but we, to us, unknown world, the going back to that world.
I totally agree. It's something that I've talked with people about going, you know, I think it's the most miraculous thing how God has created it. You mm-hmm. take a sperm and an egg and a human being comes. Mm-hmm. And there's in the medical science, right? The eye, I don't remember what it is, but like say the eyes come first, the eyebrows, the nose. You're not sitting in your mother's womb going, oh my God, I don't have a nose. Where's my nose coming? And it happens so perfectly. And if it doesn't, the mm-hmm. the baby's not born. And it's just, but there's so many things that are, we're born with that we don't know. So God creates this miracle of life. We don't have a clue how it happens. We don't understand it, but this is how it works. And then right. the baby comes out and you're looking at the baby and going, thank you, God, this is beautiful. I'll take it from here.
Yeah.
You're like, you know, I'm like, wait, you're going to, no. You think you know more than what the person or the entity that, yeah. that created this human. So you're right. We are born with it. And then the minute you come out, you don't, it's no longer there because the energy then is taken away because yeah. you've got to find it yourself. Now, one yeah. of the things that, you know, you had adversity and you had to change your perception of different things. Without adversity, without different things that happen in your life, whatever it is, losing a job, divorce, death, you can't learn anything. Mm-hmm. And if you just use that drawer of memory, in your mm-hmm. file cabinet all mm-hmm. the time, you never grow. I always have this thing that I don't want to be laying on my deathbed in kind of that esoteric state, and I see the angels around me mm-hmm. yelling at me going, we gave you every opportunity to fulfill your purpose, but you didn't listen to us. And they're yelling at me. So yeah. it's like, you want to do, there's so many, the way I believe is coincidence, serendipities, and accidents. What are these things standing for? When something goes wrong, if I spill a water on the ground, did I cause that? Was I negative? Did I have, when somebody came into my life and I gave them some money and I didn't see anything happen and I never heard from them again, what did I learn from that? There can be hard lessons, there can be easy lessons, and there can be lessons mm-hmm. we don't even know. Let mm-hmm. me ask you something, because you've went through this. What from what you've gained in your life, in your spirituality, it's much worse for unforgiveness than forgiveness. How can you, and how have you, tell our audience, how have you done things for forgiveness? Because if you don't, and you keep that anger or whatever you want to call it, you are limited. You can't move further. So how do you deal with that?
You know, the forgiveness is very difficult practice, but it's the most meaningful and worst practice. So the forgiveness, you know, we pretend we forgive, or that like you know, the layer of difficulties to even accept. But forgiveness is the most wonderful, and then I think the best spiritual practice you can do. So I think you don't have to accept the person who assault you or whatever, but for your regaining your own peace, you forgot in the past. Or as soon as we are born into this system, you know, the system called the world.
Right, right, right.
So we are taken, basically. Our goodness was taken, but regaining that, the self, truly authentic ourselves, I think we have to go through the adversities to even reminding us
Yes, you summed it up perfectly because you, but when we resist it, we become more miserable. I call it being comfortable, being uncomfortable in something you're familiar with, a bad job or a bad relationship, right? And when we're stuck in there, if you try to step out of yourself and go, well, maybe I should get the divorce, or maybe I should leave this job, or maybe I should whatever, fill in the blank. Mm-hmm. But then we don't do that. And I had a friend of mine who asked me, he came for one of my classes and one of my seminars. And he asked me afterwards, he said, you know what? You've been talking about prayer and meditation. I said, but you also said do an action. I said, what do you mean? He said, what do you mean by an action? I said, well, when you pray, you go, okay, God, I need some help. That's all I do. I don't do any Jewish prayers. I love Jewish prayers, but I don't do those. Mm-hmm. And then I meditate. I put music on. I put some shamanic music on. I put something that relaxes me, turn the lights down and blah, blah, blah. I do whatever. And then you have to do an action. Because his wife died several years ago, and he goes, well, I've been wishing for somebody in my life. I'm praying to God, but God's not answering my prayers. I said, God doesn't answer your prayers. Mm-hmm. God gives you opportunities.
Yes.
You have to search for them. It's not like if you want something, the doorbell's going to knock on the door and the doorbell's going to ring going, hi, I'm here for you. I love you. Now marry me. It doesn't work that way. So you have to do an action. Mm-hmm. And an action includes sometimes forgiveness for an old relationship. You're saying how it opens the things up, but it's also really hard. It's really because you kind of said that a little bit with the you could think you're asking for forgiveness, but you're really not. Mm-hmm. Yeah, I forgive you. Yeah, sure, I forgive you. Yeah, and just walk away. No, you really have to look in yourself, and you have to forgive yourself for what you've done. Forgive that other person, whether they're dead or alive, doesn't matter. Because you can't change those people, just like happened with your dad. And people have that with parents and family, friends, ex-wives, ex-husbands. It doesn't matter. We have it all over the place. Nothing's worse or better than the other. But it's that forgiveness, and you really have to work at it. So thank you for clarifying that. We're talking about how writing assists growth of the self. Now, I have a pencil because I can't spell. And when I write my ideas, I write them so fast. Sometimes I'm like, I can't read them. But how important is that putting pencil to paper or pen to paper as opposed to typing something? How is that different? You know, those two things are different because people don't want to bother. I have a gratitude journal I do every day. And when I have ideas, if I'm out, I put it on my phone and I recorded it. But most of the time I write stuff down. How important is that to make growth? To write things down because you get lost in those millions of noisy thoughts. How important is that?
Yeah. After I lost my husband, late husband, I was deep in grief. And then, I had a moment of a realization. And then I went back to finding my truth. So I was living in a kind of a duality of life, one life is putting protective armor on myself and then pretend nothing happened, and then I'll be okay. But on the other hand, I was crashing into really waiting, crying, and then I was so lonely. So that kind of a two different world I was juggling. But at that moment, I realized that I did the exact same thing when I was a child for survival. So duality of life was juggling, from here and there, and then because of the environment doesn't allow me to be myself. And then so I kind of used that to separate lives in my life, for survival. But anyway, once I realized I wanted to see my own truth, because I was totally lost. I lost my identity, everything, because my husband and I built the life here. And before then, in Japan, I basically escaped, right? So when I started to see my life clearly, I went back to my liking of writing. But the writing has all different level of digging. So the first, for a while, several months, I was very emotionally, like bursting out onto the paper. And I was like a nonstop, like all day I was writing. Then I look at my writing, but very emotionally, you know, charging, but it wasn't writing, you know, I wanted.
Right.
So, yeah. So, and then I realized I was still hiding lots of stuff, but emotionally charged, but not truth. Truth is much deeper. So I have to go dig and dig and dig. Many layers of digging and exploration, I started to feel I can use this writing for the sake of other people, because the lots of relatable stories, adversity itself has a power to change our lives. And so I wanted almost like a totally naked, I dig out my truth. And then it eventually it became a book, but it was my spiritual practice. It was very hard practice, but the facing truth. But that's totally forgotten who we are. But we are connected inside and outside. We are entrance and exit. It's so transparent with anyone. We are all connected. So I have to show to the world. That's how I wrote the book.
Well, that's pretty amazing, because, you know, for me, I play music and I also sing, but I play music more than I do sing. But and I do a lot of writing. It is amazing because it's meant to be. The physical being has to be used. When you're going through stuff in your mind, your physical being, you want to know how your state of mind you're in? Look at your physical body. Mm-hmm. Are you stiff? Are you not sleeping? You know, do you have dry eyes? Are your teeth hurt? There's all sorts of things that tell you what your mind's doing. We don't think that. We look for the outside to tell us what's going on. Well, how do I look? Well, just because you look a certain way doesn't mean it's not chaotic in your mind. And it's interesting how you pointed out layers, because you need to dig deeper down, and digging deeper by writing it, putting pencil or pen to paper and going through those processes and procedures, as I call them, and digging into it, figuring out where that information is coming from. Now, when you get the information, many times you're just, here's the information right here. Nice little hand. This is why I do this. But right, there's the, now you got, what am I supposed to do with it? Nothing. You can't do anything with it. You're stuck with it. But being aware that when those situations come up, that thing you uncovered, you're now aware of it. Now you can't make it go away. You can't deny it, but you try to rewrite it or reframe it. In the philosophy of Ajahnoy, there's ways to do it with amplitude modulation and frequency modulation and 0%, all these different things I have. But the idea is, whatever you do, you need to reframe it. And how you do that is by writing a new rule. Put it down on paper. It's like, if somebody did you wrong, whatever it is, and you find out where that anger came from, you have a chance to now take what you wrote on paper and rewrite something new.
Right. Yes.
You know, but that's not easy.
Yeah. But I think that we can make our lighting as a light.
Okay.
Yes. The light means, you know, when I finally found in my writing process, most of the earlier part, I was like still suffering from grieving and, you know, lots of hurt from the past. But as I dig deeper and deeper, and then with more clarity, and the truth is so beautiful. I mean, it's a shining light. All of the digging of my ugly level, I found light. So that light lifted me. So that's how worse the writing is.
And that's important. And that's how you wrote the book. And that's how you're telling people to share it with everybody, to understand that nobody's alone. And, you know, we're more powerful holding hands than we are at fists. And we are mostly, and when I was in the medical field, I traveled the world all over the world supporting X-ray tubes, medical equipment. And one thing I learned is, guess what the difference between me and somebody else in another country is? Nothing. Now, I'm not talking about the governments, and I'm not talking about all this other nonsense. Mm-hmm. Most people just want a family,
yes,
love, clean water, somewhere to live, nice food, maybe a job, and just be happy. Mm-hmm. All the other stuff gets in the way. All the other, you know, stuff. When I'm gone off this frequency, I'm not scared to death. Not as scared, not at all. Because either you got two choices. Either the death is you're worm meat and you become dirt and you go back to the ground whence you came. Well, that's fine with me because I'm a little tired and I don't like setting my alarm anymore. So if it's terminal sleep, I'm fine with that. If it's going to another frequency and you become like an angel or a spirit and you help, which I do believe that happens, but whatever it is, it's all good to me. Mm-hmm. And the stuff that we have, someday is going to come in my house and go, "Hey, George, look at those guitars. I guess this guy was a musician." Doesn't mean anything. It's just stuff. These things, that one guitar you see in the back, the first one, I got when I was 14 years old.
Oh, wow.
Yeah. And I'm 61 now. It's lasted a long time and it's got great sound. But those things mean something to me on this plane, on this frequency. I can't take that with me. The Egyptians tried that. It didn't work. Put all the diamonds in, put all the food in. It's still there. It's rotting away. I mean, they found honey because honey lasts forever, right? And they found honey that's thousands of years old and still good. You can't take it with you. So it's, we don't live along. We live about, you know, 86 years for women, maybe 82 or 83 years old for men. We don't live on average. And even if you live to 100, in the scheme of life, it's not that long. So I have wasted a lot of time in my life, like we all have, in anger, self-righteousness, ego, hatred, thinking I forgave, but I didn't forgive. Oh, yeah, I forgive you. Yeah, whatever. You really have to dig deep. And when you dig deep, once you, if you do it once and you deep dig so deep that you found out where it came from, maybe you cry or maybe you just get angry, then suddenly it releases things to the universe and doors.
Exactly. Yes. You know, the depths of your digging become totally like a vast universe.
And you don't even know what it is. You suddenly things happen to you. Like you look around, and go, where did that come from?
Yeah.
I've been talking about the musical, the past thing, because I'm very proud of it. I stopped forcing the musical I wrote. I wrote a 90-minute musical. I played all the instruments. I have the script and everything. And I was trying to force it to get people to do something. And the more I forced it, the worse it got. I met people that promised they knew somebody. They knew nothing. And about 8 weeks ago, a local writer here called me and said, "Somebody's interested in Hollywood. I talk about your musical all the time." I'm like, "You do?" Because I just figured if God meant me to write this musical, that's great. And people said, "This is really great. It's very immersive. It makes a difference." But if it maybe happens after I'm dead, I'm like, okay, you know what? I'm going to leave it on the side. I'm going to do the philosophy. I'm going to do the podcast show and see where that takes me. And because I didn't try to force it, because I didn't try to say, "Why did I do this? Why isn't it making this? Why am I, somebody's not paying me," or what, blah, 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 what, all this noise, I just let it go. And suddenly 6-8 months later, something happened. So there's another thing. When you went through all this stuff with your book, your forgiveness, your grief with your husband, all this stuff, in fact, leaving Japan, coming to the States, this didn't happen in a week. This took a lifetime.
Yes.
I mean, explain, tell people, or people who say, "Oh, you're an overnight success. No, there is no such thing. So, and success, you know, what's your definition of success? But explain to people that, or how you, from your philosophy, from your Buddhism, from your belief system, to explain that it's not supposed to happen overnight. You've got lessons to learn.
Yeah, I think that we call it daily practice. Daily practice is very important. It may be a small progress, but keep attending. And then even in a difficult situation, if you feel like you can just lift yourself, you know, inside of a chaotic situation or angry situation, you can feel like you lift your soul above your body and then see yourself from above. And then you can look around what's happening here? And then you see the anger in you, and then fear in the person you are facing, you know, all of that stuff. But we are in this air, surrounded in the love, you know, that love, you know, so it's not really worth to focus on that, the chaotic situation with anger, but we can be ignorant. You know, we have to lift yourself to keep yourself in a clear eyes, you know.
Yes.
Yeah. So yeah, I think even in a daily life, just, you can do practice like this, pretend you are not defined by the environment or the situation or emotions. We are who we are. We can lift yourself just a little, 1 foot above us.
Yes.
Or maybe into the sky, and then see exactly.
Yes, you summed that up perfectly, because it's, don't try to force. Don't try. And like I said, the Tao Te Ching talks about water all the time, all the time. You know, you go with the flow. If you go against the flow, it kicks you back. You get knocked out by the rocks behind you. That's my interpretation. But it's the idea is, you know, take your time. It's not, there is no, what's the rush? You have a certain amount of time. I don't believe, as an adult, I got my engineering degree and my MBA. And the reason why I say that is when I got it, they gave me a piece of paper and I said, this is all it is? You have to enjoy the journey.
Yes.
Not the final outcome.
Yes, exactly.
Yeah. And what you were saying is, you know, enjoy the little things. It's not the big things. It's not, oh boy, I got a new car. Well, that new car feeling is going to wear off in about 48 hours and then you're going to go on to the next thing. Mm-hmm. Experience the journey in a way, because somebody told me one time in business, you don't want to enjoy the journey. You want to only enjoy the outcome. And I thought, it doesn't make any sense to me, because this person, and not to knock this person was focused only on one thing, making a lot of money. That's fine if that's what they wanted. But I'm like, to me, if you're doing this in joy and love and abundance, if you're expressing it that way, you're going to bed in prayer and meditation, you're waking up in prayer and meditation, you're constantly doing these things a little bit every time, as you said, a little bit every day, a little bit, a foot off the, just go an inch off the ground. It doesn't matter. But you do a little bit at a time. The next thing you know, you're going to see something happen. Somebody's going to offer you to speak on something, or write a book, or get a job, or you'll find that relationship that you wanted. But you have to do an action and do a little bit at a time. You might have to go on 50 job interviews before you get the one that you want. You might have to go on 100 dates to find your match before you find it. Because it's kind of like, you know, when you're watering the ground and you've just got dirt. And I'm always picturing a neighbor going, you know, Phil, you've been watering that dirt for like 6 months. I don't see any grass. Give it up. I was like, no, it's going to happen. And then the winter comes and everything, because I'm in Illinois, so we're always having the seasons, right? So then suddenly the spring comes. So, Phil, I still don't see anything there. I think you're wasting your time wanting. No, it'll happen. It'll happen. And I might have to do 2 seasons before I see a little grass coming out. But, you know, you don't know when those seeds are planted. When it starts, it could be right underneath the dirt. And then you go, no, that's it. And then it goes away and dies. You need to keep doing and doing and doing and doing and be there for people. Do go more than what people are expected from you. Do more what you're more expected than what's expected from you. Make a difference in the world. Do things that are make a difference now and not worry about after you're gone. And so, Kiyomi, I want to thank you. We could be here talking for hours about this.
Thank you.
And, I mean, as usual, I didn't get to all my questions, but that's okay, because we could talk some other time. That's okay, because, you know, when you talk about the mind, the philosophy, the spirit, the soul, the universal mind, the angels, all this stuff, it can be so deep. And so, because if you focus on what your true self is inside, you will get exactly what you want. One more thing before we sign off for this interview. I want, what kind, you said a lot of good things, a lot of great things. Well, what kind of positive aphorism could you say to people just before we sign off here that they can leave and they can go, oh, I like that. I can think about that.
I think, you know, as a Philippian, I talk about invisible world and the invisible value, you even you don't know what you are accumulating. You know, in the Buddhism, we call it cause and effect. Whatever we do, good thing, even invisible, nobody knew. But if you do good thing, it will return to you at some point. But you just need to keep at it to it. I mean, I believe in the visible love, and then, you know, the humanity, and then our interconnectedness all the time. Mm-hmm. Sometimes it may be shadowed. You don't see the end, but still you keep working on it.
Yes.
And, yes.
Yes.
So you be experienced, you are enveloped with these great values. So, you know, sometime soon.
So, yes. And don't rush. Don't worry about it. But it is coming from love and abundance and joy and being aware of what you think about all the time and the people that are around you and what you watch on television or what you listen to on the radio or whatever you're doing. If it's negative, get rid of it. Only stick the positive, because you'll only get those insights if you have the positive in your life.
Yes.
Great. Kiyomi, I want to thank you again for being on the show today. I really appreciate it. Thank you very much.
Thank you very much.
Thank you. And remember, it is more important to express your thinking thoughts and not the thoughts, noise, that you are thinking. That is what is called conscious communication. See you next time.
Thanks for listening to Conscious Communication. If you enjoyed the show, please rate and recommend on Apple Podcasts, Overcast, or wherever you get your podcast. You can also get more great information at ConsciousCommunicationPodcast.com.